Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, actually April 5th, 2019, and the time is 9:02 a.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room in the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Natasha Von Imhoff, and I am joined today by Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Machicki. Senator Bishop is excused today. We have a quorum to do business. Thank you to members and staff and guests for wearing blue today in recognition of Child Abuse Prevention Day. Today's agenda, we will be hearing an overview of the state's deferred maintenance liability. This is a topic we must consider carefully as we develop our capital budget for fiscal year 20 and onward. So we are being joined today by Senator Schauer. As the keeper of the capital budget, I am looking closely at our deferred maintenance backlog, and I am concerned with the anemic capital budgets the last few years that we are kicking the deferred maintenance can down the road, if you will. And I think it's important that we address leaky roofs and damaged bridges and aging capital. It's important that we have pride and we take care of the assets that we own. If we spend a little money now on the current backlog, we could potentially save a lot of heartache and expenses in the future so we don't have to deal with full-blown renovation projects on our hands. So I'm looking forward to hearing how the state is handling the maintenance of our assets and the plan and the cost for handling them into the future. So I'd like to invite Neil Steininger and Shelley Wilhoit from the Office of Management and Budget to the table to begin their presentation. So when you're ready, please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee, subcommittee. My name is Shelley Wilhoit. I'm the capital coordinator for the Office of Management and Budget.
And for the record, I'm Neil Steininger, the chief budget analyst for the Office of Management and Budget. And I believe we have Mark Davis and Chris Hodgins on the phone as well from DOT.
That is correct. Yes, I see them on the phone. Are they here to testify as or to? Okay. That is true. We have Mark Davis and Chris Hagen here from the Department of Transportation who will talk about the state's centralized facilities initiative. So I'll leave it to you to decide how you want to proceed.
Okay. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to present deferred maintenance to you today. I will go over the current state of the deferred maintenance. Neil will then go over kind of the history of where we've been and where we're going. And then Mark Davis and Christopher Hodgen will speak to Division of Facility Services and how they're planning to move forward with some new things that are going to really help us manage our deferred maintenance. So with that, we'll go to slide two. And just to give a brief explanation of what deferred maintenance is, it is basically maintenance or repairs that are deferred to a future budget cycle or postponed until funding becomes available. So in a perfect world, the operating budget would cover all of the maintenance and repairs that are needed on a day-to-day basis, but as we know, in a constrained fiscal environment, that always isn't the case. And so we do have a growing amount of deferred maintenance. The preferred maintenance is really important to not let our deferred maintenance grow. And as we've seen over the years, as we spend money into deferred maintenance, we see our backlog go down. And then as we kind of go into a more fiscal constraint, we see that deferred maintenance backlog go back up. Currently, most entities are managing their preventative maintenance independently, and that, again, would be through the operating budget. And the legislature does appropriate funding for the preventative maintenance annually through that operating budget and through the public building fund. And kind of the final point on this slide is maintenance decisions must consider changing business needs, and I think that Mark and Christopher will discuss that a little bit later as we talk about how this all relates to some initiatives that a Division of Facility Services is looking at. So. Okay, on slide 3, I'll just kind of give you where we are right now. We have about 2,200 facilities statewide. There are 14 agencies that own facilities, including the University of Alaska and the court system. We have about 19 million square feet of space with a combined replacement value of about $9 billion. As you can see, the Department of Transportation has the most facilities at 645, the university with 426, and it kind of goes down from there. So this gives you a good idea of how many facilities are owned by each department. And this gives total square feet. And as we mentioned on the previous slide, Department of Transportation has the most facilities, but the university has many larger facilities. So square footage for the university is the number one here, as and DOT is number two, and then it goes down from there. So we do have several different types of facilities. For example, the university has classrooms, dorms, office space, libraries, whereas DOA is mainly office space. Department of Corrections and Health and Social Services both manage 24-hour facilities. And the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs has armories and other types of facilities to prepare them, training facilities and such. And then Department of Natural Resources has cabins and shelters and fire suppression shops. So currently this year our deferred maintenance is right at $2 billion. We are seeing about $1.84 billion of that in the different department agencies in the court system. And this is a comprehensive total of the agency deferred maintenance that we have as of this month. We have added in the school district major maintenance of $134.7 million. This is only their highest priorities. They only provide us their highest priorities. They do not provide us with their total deferred maintenance costs. And of that $134.7 million, $113.8 million is the state's share of that total.
I believe we have a question. I did want to say, though, that President Giesel has been with us, and I apologize for not introducing you right off the bat. And then Senator Schauer has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If it's in, I didn't flip ahead, so if it is ahead, I'll defer. If not, do you know on the previous slide, I was trying to wave to get attention before. Should have just spoke up. Of the 2,200 facilities, those are ones that we own, correct? Are there facilities that we rent or lease that we are also responsible for maintenance? And do you know the number and the numbers associated with those? Or are they somewhere else?
I will get you that information.
Okay,
I do not know if, I believe there are some leased facilities that we do have deferred maintenance on, but not all. But I will confirm that, and I'll get you a list.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious if there's other things we're on the hook for as well that would be included.
I apologize. I forgot to say through the chair.
Senator Machicki has a question.
Thank you. On this list of deferred maintenance, facility-related deferred maintenance, have the departments gone through an exercise to determine which of them should be surplused that are no longer critical to state operations and therefore should go out to the private sector where they can worry about the deferred maintenance or not? Is that an exercise that's taken place in the last couple of years?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, there was a governor's property disposal directive that was issued in February, and the Department of Facility Services, Mark Davis, is looking at that, and there's a slide later on discussing that.
So follow up.
Senator Machicki.
So there's, thank you, Madam Chair. So there's a chance when this is completed that some of these facilities may be on the list for being surplus when that study is complete?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes.
Thank you.
Just a follow-up question on Senator Machicki's. Did you answer when will that study be complete and available?
Through the chair, I believe it was June. Let me look at the directive. Yes, June 30, 2019, the list is supposed to be provided to the governor.
Thank you. Chair Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think when we decide some of these major policy issues on possible liquidation or surplusing equipment, we may, as on the legislative side, take an interest in it. So although the study may be done here shortly in June, I think the Madam Chairman, the legislature might be interested in having some discussion on the outcome of that, whatever that is. So we may be coming forward with a potential or letting the other branch of government know that we may want to review some of these policy calls before they're executed. Of course, the classic one, Madam Chairman, is the Marine Highway. It was one of the bigger ones, but there'll be, I'm sure, further conversations all over the state to make sure we have a thorough robust policy discussion before the policy is actually executed.
Thank you, Senator, Senator Stedman. I also want to add with that school bond debt reimbursement. We have several hundred facilities around the state. I'd like to see a plan, what potentially our plan would be for that. I see Senator Wilikowski followed by Senator Machicki.
Thank you. First, I'd like to declare a potential conflict. Moving on to my question, can you define deferred maintenance for me? And are we talking $1.97 billion? If we don't spend that, is that like roofs are going to collapse? Or is this just sort of you have a depreciation schedule and things have reached the end of their depreciation time? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of how urgent that $1.97 billion is. How much you need right away so that roofs don't collapse, boilers don't blow out, things of that nature.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. The definition of deferred maintenance is maintenance that has been postponed due to lack of resources. And we do have lists. I believe you all hopefully got the list of deferred maintenance by department that was sent out yesterday. On that, each department has prioritized their deferred maintenance needs, and they are things such as leaky roofs, HVAC systems that are at the end of their useful life, windows that are leaking, plumbing issues, electrical issues. So right now we are having the department prioritize these, but as Mark Davis will discuss in his portion of this, we are working on implementing a software package that will help us prioritize statewide. So you can compare the number one priority, for instance, from DOC, maybe one of the prison's roofs is about to collapse, to the number one priority in DNR, and help us focus our needs on those highest priorities.
Senator Machicki.
Well, thank you. I brought that up. This has been a little frustrating, and frankly, the governor and I worked on this at this table. I had the DOT budget a few years back, and we pushed for a study to take place when I was a mayor. Departments are really resistant to dispose of property because it's always nice to have a little extra storage. Along with that extra storage comes the storage of equipment that may not be needed any longer. It's just it exacerbates the problem. And I'm really grateful to see that exercise is finally occurring. We probably should have pushed it as a legislature earlier, which would have given us time as Senator Stedman said, to evaluate those lists to see if we support those items being surplus. But here we are 4 years later, and it adds significantly to the list of deferred maintenance for something that we just may not be a critical asset any longer. So I just want to congratulate the administration for finally pushing forward on that exercise.
Thank you, Senator Machiki. No further questions, please continue. Or do you have a comment on Senator Machiki's comment? Okay, I think we're on slide, was it five?
Okay, so we've talked about where we are now. In 2012, we peaked at $2.3 billion in total deferred maintenance. That was the highest total in recent history. There was an initiative for a five-year funding plan, and I believe about $100 million was funded each year from 2011 on. And from that, we saw the lowest deferred maintenance in a while, which was $1.6 billion in FY 2017. And we're now, last year was $1.7 billion in FY 2018. So as you can see, we're starting to trend back up after that five-year spending trend completed. So on to slide six. This pie chart shows the majority of the deferred maintenance backlog is within the University of Alaska, 63% or $1.2 billion. The second highest is the Department of Transportation with $301 million or 16% of the amount. And then school major maintenance is $135 million or 6% of the total amount. And all other agencies make up 15% and $300 million. Slide seven gives you just a different look by agency of the totals. And as we expect with university is the first total, I apologize, the header got stuck under the logo there. $1.2 billion for the university and $301 million for Department of Transportation. And we do expect those to be the highest since they have the most facilities.
Senator Hoffman has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have a schedule of by component, the university, transportation, schools, and other by region or by city?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that was not provided to you, but I can provide that at a House district level, if that would be sufficient.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Co-Chair Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to follow up on Senator Hoffman's question, it'd be nice, you know, to see the regional breakdown, but it'd even be, I think, nicer to have the component breakdown. When they run them, they could probably dump them in Excel for us pretty easy, and then we can see what facilities all over the state. When we take a look at that, much like we get a list for school deferred maintenance, we can see even the item that they're requesting. But on, for instance, DOT, I'm not sure where they are. And if some areas of the state are suffering for more deferral than others.
And so I appreciate that, Chair Stedman. I think one of the things that we saw in when I was on the Anchor School District Board is with the capital improvement plan, they had a total list of all the deferred maintenance, but then they had an annual plan, as in what three or four schools would they bring forward for bonding that particular year. They also discussed the rubric by which they came up with that decision. So it was comprehensive and several inputs in that rubric. And so there was a much agreement. And I think what might be helpful is rather than having, well, it's $1.97 billion. How much do you want to spend this year? Perhaps maybe a recommendation saying, well, if you spend this much this year and this much next year and this much in year three, this is what you can accomplish, and here are the here's what will happen in year four. I think having a couple-year plan, I know that Governor Dunleavy has asked for looking ahead to see what 2021 and 2022 might look like, and I think this is a big component of it.
Just
Senator Michiki.
To follow up on both of the previous senators' comments, does DOTPF, I don't know if deferred maintenance is sort of centralized on, it sounds sort of like a STIP list for highways, right? Just wondering if you have that kind of format on criticality and the importance of the repair and what happens if it's not. I mean, the factors that we just heard, is there a facilities, lack of a better term, STIP type list that prioritizes those repairs? And if so, can you share it with the committee?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki. Mark Davis will be touching on that in his portion of the presentation. The new computer software management system will do that. So he will talk about future state of that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, Senator Wilson has a question.
Yes, thank you. I'm looking through the sort of list, I guess, for FY20 that you sent out, and there's a lot of facilities here that I just don't understand the prioritization list of. Some of them seem a little bit life safety, but for, let's say, for the Department of Corrections, we have facilities that are been mothballed and closed down, but somehow they rank higher than active facilities that have what I would seem a little bit more life safety emergent repairs. It's just, I don't understand the ranking system of that, so maybe that can be given to the us a little later, because there's a lot of things in Palmer that are here that probably I think would be on the lower or the bottom of the list since it's not an active facility.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. You point out a good question. Why would a mothballed facility be higher than an active facility? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to add that it kind of dovetail with Senator Wilson, and some of this almost, and this may be more philosophical, not a question for our presenters, but some of these like that in that rack and stack seem like they should almost be included as operating costs, things that we're doing versus capital at times. So I'm curious how they come up with that rack and stack and why some of these would not be included in the cost of operating a facility versus capital, which seems more like, you know, like you said, leaky roofs, exploding boilers, things like that, or actually construction projects versus ongoing maintenance costs. So just, I don't know. I'd be curious to see how they come up with that list and how they end up there, where they're at.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. I also, thinking as you put forth a annual budget, you had mentioned earlier about $500 million was in previous years to address deferred maintenance. I think looking at our actual capabilities, our short building season, things of that nature, putting forward, of course, a realistic budget that we can actually get done in a year or 18 months, depending on the size of the project, considering our workforce that we have, our short season mobilization, demobilization, things of that nature. So the rubric is comprehensive, as you can hear a little bit already. So we look forward to seeing that prioritization list. Thank you.
Okay, on to slide 8, and I will turn it over to Neil.
Again, for the record, Neil Steininger. So I'm just going to go over fairly quickly a bit of the history on funding of deferred maintenance. For a period of time, a little over a decade, it was fairly sporadic. You can see there were low years in the $6 million range a year, a couple of high years. But it was very inconsistent, not very stable, not predictable for departments to make prioritization of that money, since it wasn't coming in a predictable fashion. In fiscal year 11, a five-year initiative was begun to try to put a predictable higher amount of money to address that backlog as it had grown pretty significantly. So approximately $100 million annually for 5 years, it ended up averaging 123 and 18.6 for school major maintenance. This chart here kind of gives you that picture of that sporadic funding and then the higher levels of funding for a period of time. And then you can see that after that five-year period, the amount of funding dropped as again, you know, down to a lower level of funding for deferred maintenance. This really shows you the impact of that higher level of funding and that initiative, that peak backlog in 2012 of deferred maintenance started coming down as we put significant and predictable amounts of money into deferred maintenance. And then once that initiative stopped, you can see the backlog start to come back up. And you can see the problems start to rise back up again.
Thank you. We have a question from Co-Chair Stedman.
We can go back, Madam Chairman, to slide nine. Looking back at slide nine, several of us at the table were sitting here. A couple of us were sitting here back in the 2000 range when we had flat funding, but funded budgets for several years, about a decade or so, as I recall. Coming into the 06 time frame when you start seeing the red bar materialize, we had, Madam Chairman, flat budgets and a growing backlog of deferred maintenance. So when we came into better revenue times in 06, one of the first things we did was hit the deferred maintenance budget for schools and eliminate that. And we found, or 05, might have been 05, we eliminated it. And by doing so, the list materialized the following year, where people actually, communities and schools actually realized we were going to deal with their deferred maintenance, and they started submitting their deferred maintenance list again back to the state. So I'd just like to highlight that for the history of it. And then we, over the next, at the table, several years from 06 on, tried to deal with the deferred backlog and repair a lot of it. And just a point to consider, Madam Chairman, if we head into several years of flat and declining budgets, that we don't end up with a period like shown here on the screen from 98 through 05, where we basically built up this backlog that you see materializing in 06 on, because this is showing appropriate funding history and not the deferred maintenance issue behind the funding. In other words, there was a lot of deferred maintenance building up on the left-hand side of that chart from 98 to 05 that's not reflected. And just something we need to consider going forward so we don't walk into the trap of building deferred maintenance and ending up with a pent-up demand. As soon as we get a revenue change, it absorbs everything in sight for several years, like several years ago.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. I think seeing what you showed us in slide 8, that there was $100 million annually for 5 years, and then seeing this slide here, that the backlog is increasing, the question that I have for you is, does OMB plan to put forward a deferred maintenance plan recommending a certain amount be spent on deferred maintenance for fiscal year 2020 and beyond? Or are you going to leave it up to the legislature to land on a number?
So, to the chair, that actually kind of brings me pretty well to one of our slides here where we discuss the money that we've identified that we can put towards deferred maintenance in FY20 and moving forward, and sort of the lessons learned from that period of consistent funding, and then when that funding dropped off and how it increased the problems with the deferred maintenance backlog. And that one of those lessons learned is that consistent and steady funding that's predictable and adequate really helps for planning what projects get funded, what deferred maintenance gets addressed, and allows us to better address that backlog in concert with looking at which facilities we need to retain, which ones can be divested, and to truly look at this problem holistically. So I do agree a plan that is followed is beneficial to this problem.
So thank you for this slide. A couple questions. Let's just start with the second bullet. Large passenger vessel gambling taxes in governor's proposed budget. Has that bill passed yet?
So this isn't a bill. This is a fund transfer of revenue from large passenger vessel gambling transferred into the capital income fund, and then the capital income fund is what we're using to fund deferred maintenance. So approximately $27 million gets deposited into the capital income fund out of the earning reserve account through the Amerita Hess money. And then an additional approximately $10 million a year could come from the large passenger vessel gambling taxes. That's following a practice that was done for a couple of years, and we're recommending that we continue that practice of putting large passenger vessel gambling taxes into the capital income fund. Between those two sources of money, we'd have approximately $35 to $40 million annually that would be available for deferred maintenance. That kind of gives us that steady state of money that we can be somewhat reliable and allows for planning purposes into the future.
Thank you. And is that currently in the governor's budget right now? These two fund sources and this level of funding is in the governor's budget at this time?
Correct.
Thank you. Chair Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, it might be helpful to Madam Chairman, to have them give you a historical accounting of the vessel gambling tax so you could see what's been done with it since its creation. And clearly that is subject to appropriation year by year, so we may have an intent last year to do something and this year something else, or maybe the same thing, and the next legislature might have a different idea. So you might want to grab the history of it. I think it would be beneficial whenever we look at the fund source changes and maneuvers from year to year or every other year.
Thank you. I think that's a good point. And so if you could get back to the committee with how the large passenger vessel gambling taxes, how much it has been the last maybe 5 to 7 years, and how that funds, how those funds have been used. I saw Senator Murkowski's hand go up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have an average of how much roughly is added every year to the backlog of deferred maintenance?
Through the chair, Senator Walikowski, I have the last 2 years, fiscal year 17 through 18, showed a growth of $58 million, and 18 to 19 showed a growth of $169 million.
Senator Walikowski.
So I just did some rough math here, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if we have $1.9 billion in deferred maintenance and your plan is to spend approximately $35 to $40 million annually, that'll take roughly 47 and a half years to pay off all the deferred maintenance currently in existence, and we're adding another $58 to $100 plus million dollars per year. Is my math right, or is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bulikowski, that sounds correct.
Does that sound like a viable plan to you?
Through the chair, Senator Bulikowski, it's a first step towards plan. Consistency in funding is very important, as is the amount of funding. Mark Davis and Chris Hodgen with DOT can go into a little bit more detail about truly understanding what the adequate level would be. There's one of the issues we faced, and Senator Wilson and Senator Schauer kind of touched on it when they're asking about the prioritization within some of the different departments, is that we don't have a consistent look at deferred maintenance across the state. Every department is looking at deferred maintenance independently right now. And so getting a consistent understanding of what the true deferred maintenance is across the state with similar objective standards being placed upon every facility is fairly important. So we don't have a good number of what the exact amount every year is needed for deferred maintenance until we can really get a good handle objectively across the board on what the requirements are. And that's a big piece of the effort that Chris and Mark are putting in at the Division of Facility Services.
So thank you. 35 to 40 million is like paying the bare minimum of your credit card, as Senator Wilkowski pointed out. Why don't you perhaps suggest a higher amount, considering that with the governor's agenda of decreasing the budget, what should we do with those surplus funds?
Chair Von Himhoff, this was the amount we had available as we were developing the budget.
We're 2 months past February 13th. Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can somebody explain to me how this works as far as the federal match with this? Because it seems like we're almost talking two categories of money, 35 to 40 million, and then the federal matching comes in. So how do those tie when we're talking that's other money that's going to come in that's obviously much bigger based on the federal match of dollars that we put in? So where am I missing between these columns of how this money is accounted for when Senator Willikowski's question, which I understand it, but how does that tie in with the federal dollars? Because it seems like we're missing a big chunk of money here as we're talking of the overall number. So can somebody explain that to me, where that's at?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, there's no federal match associated with any of the deferred maintenance appropriations that we've put forward. There may be some projects on those deferred maintenance backlog lists that could be available for federal match, and if that's the case, we certainly would encourage seeking that federal match, but the deferred maintenance funding that we've put forward is state funds only at this time.
Follow-up, Senator Schauer.
Thank you. I guess what I'm asking for is maybe a slide or something that would show us the different categories, because we talk about these almost like they're together, but yet we're discussing this in almost two separate silos here, and it would be nice to see something that showed the entire plan and where they are, because that gets hard in this discussion if we're going to separate the dollars here. But we talk about a capital budget with federal match and the projects, and I'm not seeing that, and that would help me see the whole picture. Right now I feel like I'm getting in the weeds as opposed to the 30,000-foot view, and it'd be nice to have that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Senator Machicki.
I might have caused part of that confusion when I brought up the STIP conversation a little earlier. So aside from airports and highways and ports, perhaps, it's interesting because we talk about it as though this is a sudden problem with the tighter budgets, but the reality of it is, and our Constitution talks about a one-third going to capital on the annual appropriation, which has never occurred. But we have a similar backlog that we did to FY11, which is leading into the highest spending years that we've ever seen. And I'm not going to point fingers at where the management problem is here, but are we looking at how other states are managing their deferred maintenance? Certainly there's a better model. I mean, this is an ongoing $1.5 billion plus since FY11, and that's as far as this sheet goes that you provided. Certainly there's a better way to manage it on a percentage of the annual budget or a better plan for this ongoing, now a decade-long problem of significant deferred maintenance that doesn't seem to drop. So is it a departmental administration problem, or how can we manage this in a way? Certainly, I guess the question I'm asking is, are we spending some time with other states to see how they manage it that have been around for centuries longer in some cases, or is this a similar problem in every state?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I think I'll pass that question to Chris and Mark. They've spent a lot more time looking at sort of the developing the Division of Facility Services. We are in a time of change for how we handle deferred maintenance at the state. The Division of Facility Services, as it gets stood up and becomes a more mature organization, we'll see a change in the way that we're addressing this problem, and that's primarily what they'll want to discuss in their portion of the presentation.
I can ask that again later, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We are on slide 12.
So this shows the sources of funding that we're using in the governor's budget to address deferred maintenance. Here's how we have proposed spending that money. Approximately $21 million was included as a supplemental appropriation for fiscal year 19. In fiscal year 20, we have $26.6 million going towards statewide facilities, $7.4 million going towards K-12 major maintenance, The public building fund is $4.5 million, university $5 million, and the courts $2.8
million. So a quick question here on regards to K-12 major maintenance. For locations in the state that don't have organized boroughs and don't necessarily have the ability for a local match, what are their options for maintaining their buildings?
Through the chair, I don't have an answer for that question right now, but we can get back to you.
Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few years ago, we passed legislation to utilize the rural educational attendance area fund that was dedicated strictly for constructing the unmet needs for construction of new schools, and we opened that appropriation up to include deferred maintenance for rural schools, and that was legislation that was passed over 10 years ago that was a formula-driven to establish the REAA fund as a percentage of the fund that the state of the municipalities in the organized areas of the state in debt. So I think it's, I don't remember what percentage it was dedicated to rural school construction, but it was based on a formula that first class and organized boroughs in debt for urban school construction. So a portion of that is available depending upon what the administration presents to the legislature, and I haven't looked at that, if that is being utilized today under the 7.4 million that's being presented in this budget.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. I did see Senator Wilson's hand was up, and then followed by Chair Stedman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Our recent South Central earthquake may have damaged some of the buildings and items that are in this long repair list. Has any of those repairs or costs been taken out of sort of our ongoing deferred maintenance in terms of any reimbursement through insurance or any other items that could lessen our deferred maintenance for those buildings that are in South Central that may have been damaged?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, we did ask each department to remove any items that would be reimbursed by insurance or other funding for the earthquake.
Chair Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd just like to add on to what Senator Hoffman said. I think we need to be cautious when we start changing policy and making major policy changes. As an example, when we remove the maintenance issue from the organized boroughs that have the ability to do some maintenance themselves, that we don't totally cripple the rural areas that don't have the ability to do their maintenance when the state steps in and does it. And to keep the balance, and he had mentioned the formulation between rural and urban, that we don't get so focused on the urban side that we take our eye off the rural side and we end up with even a worse mess in rural Alaska where there is no maintenance on those facilities, because ultimately it comes back to our responsibility for education. So we need to be careful with that, how we recognize the difference between the two areas of the state, and we maintain a balance, and we don't end up making a bigger mess going forward.
Thank you. Please continue.
So starting in fiscal year 18, kind of starting the shift in philosophy of how we were addressing deferred maintenance, we had $20 million funded at a statewide level rather than funding specific projects or specific amounts to agencies. This allowed us to attempt to weigh projects in different departments against each other. And we really looked at prioritizing life, health, and safety issues. You can see in this chart how we landed on the distribution of that $20 million. And so we were looking at life, health, safety, assets that had risks of imminent failure, you know, a roof that looked like it might be ready to collapse, those sorts of things, as well as timely project execution, and, you know, maintaining a, you know, maintaining things that maintain a program's mission or demonstrate a return on investment. This parent continued it in fiscal year 19 with another $20 million distribution. You can see this table adds up to a little over $20 million. That's because in FY 18, a portion of contingency for emergent projects was withheld from the $20 million of about $400,000+. And then also when we were going to distribute the FY 19 money, one department came back and said we got all of our projects done with a little bit of money left over. So we had some extra money to distribute in 19. And common projects here are roof replacements, safety compliance replacements, plumbing, electrical repairs. I believe we've distributed to you a list of the distribution of the specific projects that were distributed both these years. In making these distributions, we've been working with the Division of Facility Services as it's starting to get stood up to get their input on, you know, how to distribute this money and to ensure that we're, you know, taking into consideration and listening to the experts in facility maintenance as we make decisions. So now I'm going to hand it over to Mark Davis and Chris Hodgen to go over the timeline of creation of the Division of Facility Services, unless there's further questions on my portion of the presentation.
Chair Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think we may want to do sometime is there's a sheet in here on statewide deferred maintenance backlog that lists the agencies along with the university and the courts. And it looks like once you remove the university from it, back in 11, we would, our deferred maintenance number would have went from roughly $1.6 billion to $858 million. But doing the same exercise on 2019, we go from $1.8 billion to right under $600 million. So in other words, factoring out the university over the last several years, we would have went from roughly, rounded up on both numbers, $900 million down to $600 million. So I think when we look at the aggregate numbers, we want to factor out the university because it looks like we're actually making some headway on our on the deferred maintenance issues outside of the university. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. So we are on slide 16, and we have Mr. Mark Davis and Mr. Christopher Hodgkin on the line. Could you please introduce yourself? Excuse me, I apologize. We have Senator Schauer who would like to ask a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief question. I would like to know from the university if we could get somebody, because it is a good question. Why are they so far behind? It seems like that number's, I meant to ask this before. Senator Stephan just kind of kicked my brain on that one. It would be, I think it would be interesting to know why they're deferred maintenance backlog is so high, what their plan has been and how they've executed or not been able to execute it. So it seems really large for me compared to the rest of them. So why is that? So perhaps we could ask somebody from that area if they could provide us a more detailed report on why they are unable to apparently knock their backlog down. What's happening, I guess, is big picture. Back to that global perspective, it would be interesting to know why. Thank you.
Thank you. I think part of that is that the university did have an expansion with libraries and engineering buildings and museums and athletic centers and so forth that are beautiful, large, expensive buildings. So that puts a little bit of pressure on the whole system. So again, we are on slide 16. And Mr. Davis and Mr. Hodgkin, if you could introduce yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair Von Imhoff and Chairman Stedman. For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm the Director of the Division of Facility Services, and with me here is Christopher Hodgkin. And today we appreciate the opportunity to present this information to you. The first slide shows information about our division. It was established based on a statewide study, department-level collaboration, and recommendations dating back to 2015. In 2017, OMB directed the division be established and to begin the process of consolidating the function of facility maintenance into one organization. And on the 1st of July, that was of 2018, that started our first year of operations. And one of the expectations that has been articulated to our team from OMB is to provide assistance and recommendations in the areas of deferred maintenance for state-owned facilities. Next slide, please. From working with our facility council representatives from each of the departments and members of OMB, we've refined processes for prioritizing facilities' deferred maintenance requests. Our goal has been to incorporate a facilities condition assessment and index as an unbiased comparison of facilities as a key component to our recommendations. We expect to be able to begin the FCI assessments next fiscal year. Our division has secured a contract with the AIM Asset Works company. We are now implementing an enterprise-level computerized maintenance management system, and that's going to enable us to deal effectively with an extremely large amount of data covering our 2,000-plus buildings that the state owns. We are also looking into linking the Alaska Energy Efficiency Program with future deferred maintenance projects. I will now hand over the briefing to Christopher Hodgen, who is a senior project manager and team leader in the Division of Facility Services.
Thank you, Director Davis. Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you, Shelley and Neil. For the record, my name is Christopher Hodgen. I am a project manager for Division of Facility Services. So we would now be on slide 18, the deferred maintenance strategy.
Actually, if I could just stop you there real quickly. On the end of slide 17, the last bullet is implement a computerized maintenance management system for monitoring statewide maintenance and facilities conditions. Is this system up and running? Is it currently being implemented? If so, when will it be up and running?
Madam Chair, this is Mark Davis. We are in the process of implementing the system. It's going to be a 2.5-year long process, but we believe our first module will be able to go live on the 1st of September.
Okay. I want to appreciate that your bullet point of integrate energy efficiency program into the process, I think, is a very good step, and I'm pleased to see that. Thank you. So there's no further questions. So, yes, please proceed to slide 18.
Thank you.
Okay. Excuse me. I apologize. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering on the implementation of their computerized maintenance management system, is that being coordinated through DOA with sort of a shared service sort of a arrangement, or how is that being? I'm just curious on the implementation of this. Is one of those many ongoing databases systems that we seem to have ongoing in the state with no coordination. I just want to know how this project was coordinated.
Through the chair, thank you very much for that question. The computerized maintenance management system requirement was developed as part of that 18-month-long study that was done in conjunction with the overall decision to consolidate the maintenance function. There was a software subcommittee with members from four of the different departments that made that recommendation, and we identified several different similar systems doing that function at a lot of the dysfunction of those who had those systems. So we saw the opportunity to consolidate that into one system, and that was fully vetted through OIT, went through a very exhaustive process, And so we see that as the system of record, and then and those other systems should eventually end. They shouldn't be needed anymore. So overall, we do see that this is going to be a savings to the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Seeing no further questions, please proceed.
Thank you. So on slide 18, our proposed vision moving forward for the deferred maintenance strategy would be one of a coordinated and programmatic approach involving all of the departments, continuous, transparent, and results-based, with the effort of maximizing our subject matter expertise within the state as much as possible regarding facilities. It would involve first objective assessments of the facility conditions, so their deferred maintenance and energy improvement needs. Second, the systematic prioritization and selection of these candidate projects, and I'll share a little bit more about that on the next slide. Third, execution of the projects, and then fourth, results-based key performance indicator measurements with a few different factors. So now moving to slide 19. So assessing the condition and needs, it first begins with developing the facilities condition indexes, and this index is simply the value of the repairs of the facility divided by its total replacement value. We would then want to incorporate other factors. So we envision incorporating a building mission and system factor. The building mission factor would simply be a representation of how essential is that building in a department's ability to carry out its mission. And the building system factor would simply be how critical is that system that needs repairs. So for example, fire and life safety systems in a building would be rated higher. So the FCI's building mission and system factors, these would be used to develop the project index values, and then we can use these to prioritize and vet the projects with the State Facilities Council. So following this first pass of prioritized projects, we would then incorporate some energy efficiency factors for these buildings to determine opportunities where we could leverage combined deferred maintenance and financed energy improvement opportunities. So to maximize the source of different fundings as much as possible to accomplish as much as possible.
Thank you. I actually have a quick question. These concepts have been discussed in the private sector for years, and in fact, with the Anchor School District, when I was there, we had the CPI, the Capital Improvement, or CIP, Capital Improvement. Are you suggesting that this department is starting this from scratch in 2019 for the first time, or is this a reiteration of something that you've done in the past?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. The facilities condition index has been done amongst like some of the departments, like Health and Social Services has used that methodology before. Not all of the departments have used these kinds of methodologies. So some of it is taking from what's already been built and enhancing and improving it. And some of it is taking it and incorporating these best practices with departments that have never done it before.
Has the DOT and the university, your two largest buckets, have they used it?
Madam Chair, that would be, I'm not familiar if the university has done it before.
Co-Chair Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Speaking of the university, looking back at the historic numbers, it looks like in 2011 and 2012, their backlog jumped from $773 million. It jumped up about $400 million in 1 year. So I'd have to question their 2011 numbers erroneous or their 2012 jump up is erroneous, but you can't have $400 million materialize in 1 year unless we have an earthquake or something really bad happen. And then when you jump forward to 2019 compared to 2018, it jumped up $175 million. So I think that we have a benchmark issue that we need to keep track of. It should be fairly linear, I would think, given the growth of assets, buildings, or what have you. So it looks like those numbers jump around quite a bit, Madam Chairman. So this is a little bit of concern. And then on this slide, the word that's used, recapitalization. When I see recapitalization, I think of a sinking fund, or you're setting aside your depreciation or what have you here to repurchase an asset in the future or replace it. So under this formula, Madam Chairman, is there any, and what's the status of any set-aside accounts for replacing buildings and what have you with this term recapitalization used, or maybe they can further that definition.
Mr. Davis, Mr. Hodgkin, if you could respond to Senator Stedman's question.
Through the chair to Senator Stedman, that's perhaps a poor choice of words. The intent is that we are taking care of the state's assets and increasing the life of those assets to the greatest extent possible in an efficient manner.
Okay.
Chair Stedman?
And just a follow-up. And then on the facilities condition index, I see you got the formula there. If you have a new facility, it wouldn't have a deferred maintenance issue, shouldn't have a repair issue, and it shouldn't have a deficiency issue, so that part of the equation would be zero, and I would assume then that formula would bring back a zero numeric or an error factor or something. So how do you justify substantial funds coming out of brand new buildings, and how do you deal with brand new buildings or buildings that are only, say, less than 4 or 5 years old?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I understand the question. I do believe that sometimes the terms operations and maintenance is lumped together to represent what are the costs of running a particular facility. So depending on how that numbers arrived at, that could include the utilities that are required to run the building, the grounds maintenance that might be required for a particular building, clearing snow in the wintertime, or perhaps some of the supplies that are required for that building to achieve the functionality that it was designed for.
Okay, I don't see any further questions. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving to slide 20. So these are just really the high-level steps of the process where we would work with OMB. So the candidate projects would be selected by priority. These candidate projects would then be reviewed by the State Facilities Council for any adjustments and creation of a final recommended list. Then the Division of Facility Services would submit the recommended projects to OMB, and the final step would be the state would fund the projects through its legislative and executive process. Moving to the next slide. So following execution of the projects, our vision again is to have key performance indicators to measure performance. So these potential key performance indicators would be before and after, FCI values before and after, and energy use index improvement values before and after, and then the value of deferred maintenance projects completed per year. So thank you. I can transition now back to Director Davis for the continuation of the brief.
Thank you, Chris. This slide shows some of the key points of our effort to comply with the directive relative to disposing state assets. The Division of Facility Services working with the Facilities Council to compile the data on facilities and providing that information to the Office of Management and Budget. There are a number of regulations and statutes which govern the disposal of state-owned facilities. Those assets which have been federally funded may require some repayment depending on the different rules of the different federal agencies. And in some cases, there may be some remediation that's required of any hazmat that's associated with a particular asset. Our role in this process is collaborating with the Facilities Council representatives from the departments to make recommendations to OMB. There has been some divestment of facilities over the last 20 years, not reflected on this slide, but noteworthy is the Division of Military and Veterans Affairs has disposed of 15 facilities since 2006, and they are either in the process or working on divesting up to 50 more facilities. Recently, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities sold two facilities, which brought $5.5 million back to the state. So those are my comments for this slide. Are there any questions?
Senator Hoffman has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On your first bullet, you refer to the State Facility Council. Can you tell the committee who is on that council and how often do they meet?
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Hoffman, the Facility Council members are from are the spokesperson from each of the departments. Some have multiple members. We have also included our partners from the Office of Management and Budget. And originally, the Facilities Council was stood up during the early study and deliberation about consolidating the maintenance function. And now we have made it kind of a permanent body, and we meet at least once a quarter, and sometimes more often.
If I might follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
And are there written minutes and recommendations that come out of this council that can be reviewed by the public and by the legislature?
Through the chair, we do keep minutes. We haven't been keeping that level of documentation for that purpose, but we certainly can come to a higher resolution so that can become a public record. We certainly are willing to share any notes and products that come out of those meetings.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Just to build upon what Senator Hoffman asked, I do recall in the previous administration, I believe that we received a list of particular facilities that the state and DOT were planning on potentially putting up for sale. Do you have any work from the previous administration's recommendations, and are you planning on incorporating that work done on disposal of various state assets?
Madam Chair, thank you for that question. Yes, we do have information from prior years, and that is part of the all of the information that our group is going to be going through over the next several months.
Okay, thank you. Chair Stedman has a question.
Just on a follow-up on that answer, I think, Madam Chairman, it might be nice if they forward some of that information on to the chairman. Dealing with the previous administration's work on potential disposal and what they're disposing of, so we don't have to read about it in the newspaper.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. I think that as an overall effort, I heard some dates saying that the computer process may not be ready till September, that some of this process is ongoing, that the current budget that we have now was done in February. This is a very dynamic process, and it changes frequently. And I think it's important that on a periodic basis we have updates and provide those updates to the legislature, especially during session while we are making decisions of allocation of limited cash. The sale of assets is important and needs to be considered when we create the maintenance backlog lists. And yes, there has been work done in the previous administration because I sat at this table and listened to the presentation, so I know that they're out there. And I'm curious to see whether some of those buildings have been sold or if they're still sitting on our books, and if they are, why. And that would have been nice to actually take existing work that's out there and provide an update, because several of the committee members have seen this before. So maybe that's something that can be followed up to the committee on an update of the previous administrative work and the sale or not sale of their recommendations in the last year or so. Are there any further questions, Senator Machicki?
Just on this page, the bullet that talks about governing federal regulations and rules, just wondering if we passed the Uniform Environmental Covenants Act last year, just ask you to make sure that our remediation standards are not excessive if an equipment storage shop is going to be sold to be used as an equipment storage shop. That's different than a site being used for as a daycare. So I don't know if you've revised your considerations for remediation, but it's certainly something you need to take into account if you haven't yet.
Okay. Do you have any comments at all for Senator Machicki's question before I go on to Chair Stedman?
Through the chair to Senator Machicki, there have been no changes to the regulations and no different ways of evaluating that. So yes, we will do that.
Thank you, Chair Stedman, followed by Senator Hoffman.
Just a point of concern. This was my previous question. I didn't get to it quite. Trying to do a little follow-up on getting information to the committee on what's going on in the background with all these lists. But this is a point, a heads up, and a point of concern is Senator Hoffman and Senator Olson. They send some of their kids in their district down to my district for education, and down at that school called Mount Edgecombe, there is Penrod Hall, which is an old military barracks that's closed. Used to be a boys' dorm back when I was in high school. There's also a fire station that's abandoned from World War II, and there's also a mechanics garage that's abandoned from World War II. My concern, Madam Chairman, is that those facilities, as DOT inherits them in this consolidation and of maintenance effort and catching up on deferred maintenance, that those buildings and the cost of those buildings for demolition is not extracted from Mount Edgecombe School. Because quite frankly, I don't think there'd be enough money for lunch and dinner for the kids if they did that. These facilities they're loaded up Penrod Hall with asbestos and needs to be removed. And the fire station and the mechanics garage is a blight on the visuals of the community, literally. So just as a heads up to the department, they need to be cleaned up, but you may want to modify your formulas to take into account these World War II buildings and that are not held against the management and education of the children of Mount Edgecombe High School. Just a point of concern, because they are three nasty buildings that we need to deal with.
Well, I think I would add, as we see our deferred maintenance budget of 35 to 40 million, I'm assuming there'll be a list that goes with it. And in that list, members can take a look, and if there's anything that catches their eye that wants to take an additional deeper dive, that would be the appropriate time to do that. And so if the Mount Edgecombe World War II buildings are on that list, we can take a look at that. We have Senator Hoffman, followed by Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last bullet point you refer to historical disposals. that have been limited, but I would like to see those disposals, particularly the acreage of land that went along with these disposals, and any future facility disposals that are being considered, the size of the land that is going with those facilities. Is it historical that the land be sold, or is there a long-term lease associated with those facilities that are being disposed?
Through the chair to Senator Hoffman, I acknowledge that request for information on the list as it as it's developed. The only land land parcel that was conveyed, I believe, was a about an acre worth of land near Birch Lake, near Fairbanks, which became landlocked from private owners of that piece of land. So there wasn't the opportunity to use that piece of land based on its original intent. So that's the only acreage that I'm aware of that has been sold recently.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just looking at the statewide deferred maintenance backlog list here, what happened to harbors on the list for 19? Are they not going to be there for 20, or just we're done with all the repairs and items of the harbors?
I can help
through the chair to Senator Wilson. Those lists indicate the items, the projects that were selected and prioritized for those fiscal years. So even though there may still be a remaining requirement for deferred maintenance on harbors or other facilities for that matter, doesn't mean that they would not be considered for this coming fiscal year and those to come. So depending on what is presented for consideration, obviously not everything would end up on the list.
Senator Stedman.
I think I can help with that answer, Madam Chairman. Maybe a decade ago, probably a little bit longer, the legislature put together a package to deal with all the deferred maintenance and backlog of the harbors. We put in a proposal that the state would pay 50% of the new construction costs. And in doing so, Madam Chairman, the municipalities would have to have a sinking fund, would have to be encapsulated in an enterprise fund at the local level, including sinking funds and maintenance funds and so on and so forth. And we have a very successful program, and we have moved those harbors from the books of the state to the municipalities all across the state. There's a handful of small remaining ones, most of which are in my district, that we're trying to dispose of. So that is a very successful program, requiring a 50% match again for the communities, and the future responsibility of the finances of replacement borne by the community. So that is why you see harbors heading to zero, and zero is a good number, Madam Chairman. I'm very proud of that number, and I'm looking forward to dealing with the last smaller harbor facilities around the state.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. We have Senator Schauer followed by Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, sites like Mount Edgecombe, I could be wrong, but I believe it was designated as a historical site. And I know that it certainly happened at Elmendorf, J-Bear, when we had old buildings, World War II, and we couldn't tear them down to put new buildings in because they were designated historical, but there is a lot of federal money that is available to continually re-upgrade them, to even have to go back, get those old telephone lights, glass little big light things on there, had to find a company to build the exact same ones because you couldn't put new lights on the building because it was historical. My point is I'm curious if anyone has looked at some of the sites that we own that are historical where you would be able to get federal money to do upgrades, et cetera, because it is there. And if we haven't, we should explore that.
Mr. Davis, Mr. Hodgkin.
Through the chair to Senator Showers, we will look into that.
So I have still up Senator Wilikowski and Senator Machicki. The bells have rung, and we have one more slide. So Senator Wilikowski.
All right, thank you. What percentage of the deferred maintenance is capable of being done in-house by state maintenance workers versus the percentage that goes to contractors?
Through the chair to Senator Wilikowski, I don't have the exact percentage of the work, deferred maintenance work that we do in-house versus that which we contract out. But I can say that there is a lot of work that our maintainers do that could be categorized as facilities or deferred maintenance. And those projects are completed within the departments, and essentially they never end up on the deferred maintenance list. So we are taking advantage of that capability.
Senator Wilikowski.
And has there been any sort of cost-benefit analysis looked at? Because I'm looking at a lot of these projects, and it seems like you could have in-house staff do certainly a large percentage. Has there been any sort of cost-benefit analysis of possibly increasing our in-house staff, our maintenance staff, construction staff, versus and have them just sort of go out and work on these across the state versus going through a contracting process?
Through the chair, yes, Senator, we do take advantage of that capability. It's balanced with the other maintenance requirements of, you know, doing the routine repairs and doing the preventative maintenance. We have not done a specific cost-benefit analysis of those projects, but we certainly can do that.
Thank you, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you. I'll make it quick, Madam Chair. We, you know, now that we're looking at a prioritized, results-based, KPI-driven system, and I have to say 20 years late like you did earlier, once it's populated and live and we look at the disposal plan, I understand that we have a deferred maintenance backlog, but I don't think we're going to find it as severe as the first picture. When you look at the $1.8 billion that's on here today and you back out transportation, the federal match projects, which we have been keeping up with, you back out the university, which I think does have to be looked at separately, and I think would be a significant part of the disposal plan, you have a $300 million problem, which I think is something that you schedule separately than the rest of it. I'm just not sure. I'm looking forward to the populated system, the results they pull out of it, and the disposal plan. I personally don't feel alarms going off, and we'll just have to see what that looks like when that system goes live.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Senator Stedman.
I'm just curious, Madam Chairman, and I can get with you afterwards with a few more questions, but does the courts use DOT? And if not, do they have a more streamlined process to get the cost down, which would be a different direction from the previous question before the previous one of expanding our staff, but more of a different direction? Could you help us with how the court does their process?
Through the chair to Senator Stedman, yes, we do maintain the court system buildings. Some of those are through RSA, and some of those are through other arrangements. So the answer is yes.
Thank you. We have one last slide. Slide 23, that's the last one before the appendix. If you would care to take 1 minute and walk us through that, please.
Our last slide, thank you very much, Madam Chairman. We continue to assist OMB and work with the Facilities Council in this process. We look forward to getting uniform assessments of our facilities in order to focus on the resources that are made available to us. And we understand the importance of this, and we're trying to make this as systematic and unbiased as we possibly can. And so that concludes my prepared remarks.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here today. I would like to invite OMB to potentially take a second look at their funding recommendation for fiscal year 20 for deferred maintenance in light of the backlog that we discussed here. We could potentially
break it into parts, whether it's DOT, university, and then everything else. But if you feel that after you take a look at it that the university needs a little bit more money in order to address their very large billion-dollar backlog, we'd be open to suggestions to look at that as we build our capital budget. That concludes today's meeting. Our next meeting is Monday at 9 a.m. We will be seeing the Department of Health and Social Services presenting their Medicaid cost containment efforts in phase one. We are adjourned.